So you've probably seen somewhere the letters WWJD on a bookmark or a bracelet. Maybe you wear one of those bracelets yourself. The letters stand for What Would Jesus Do? And the mnemonic device is popular with many megachurch Christians to remind them to be more Christ-like in their dealings with other people. Well, my next guest, well-known historian and Catholic critic in both senses of the word, Gary Wills, titled his new book, What Jesus Meant, and says that's the more important question, and that many Christians, Catholic and Protestant, misunderstand their own religion in this way. We welcome Gary Wills, now the author of What Jesus Meant, back to WNYC. Thanks so much for coming on with us again, Dr. Wills.
Good to be here.
Why do you start with a case of, or why do you say it's a case of do as I say, not as I do, when it comes to Jesus for Christians?
Well, Jesus was not an ethical teacher, as Socrates was, or Epictetus, or Epicurus. He was, I believe, Christians believe, the Son of God, who came to unite us to the Father with him. And what he did was shocking, and kinds of things that we cannot do, should not do. He was trying to prove to us that he is the Son of God, that he has claims far greater than any other, than a merely ethical teacher. And what he did and said was extremely radical, so radical that people tried to tame it down and make it a kind of everyday ethical teaching. It's not that. He came to say that his union with the Father is more important than any political arrangement. He expressly avoided all political involvement, commitment. That doesn't mean that we are supposed to do it. It means that his mission was quite different. When Pilate says to him, "Are you a king?" he says, "My reign is not of this order. If it were, my followers would fight for me." They are not fighting for him, and they shouldn't fight for him. So that people who try to make a Christian crusade or war that Jesus prompts are completely misreading what Jesus was and said and meant. Jerry Falwell, for instance, says, "God is pro-war." Well, it's very hard to read the New Testament and agree with that. The New Testament is full of extreme pacifism. It's full of extreme statements on all fronts.
But that's just from one political perspective. You go much further. Your foreword is even entitled, "Christ is Not a Christian," which sounds like a good tabloid headline, but I guess you're making that point about him not taking ethical sides at all?
No, of course he took very strong ethical sides, but they're not the ones that we normally follow. For instance, he says there's only one test for getting into the reign of heaven, and that's this: I was hungry and you fed me, I was naked and you clothed me, I was in prison and you visited me, I was scorned and you took care of me. And if you didn't do those things, he turns to others and says, "I was hungry and you did not feed me, you may not enter the reign of heaven." So what he says is, you did that, what you do to the lowliest of my brothers, you do to me, is what he says. So that means if we persecute people, we're persecuting Jesus. If a priest molests a boy sexually, he's molesting Jesus. If we torture people, we're torturing Jesus. That's pretty high ethical standard, but it's not Aristotle's virtue in the mean.
When you talk about feeding the poor and helping the downtrodden in general as such a central ethic of Jesus, it almost makes him sound like, at least in the economic sense, a welfare socialist, which you also say specifically in the book, he was not.
No, as I say, he took no political stance. There was no political system that he belonged to. This is a totally different standard, a higher standard, a much more difficult standard. He's not saying be generally nice to the poor. He says everything you do to one particular poor person, you're doing to me. Mm-hmm. That's not a position that any government can take. It's only the follower of Jesus who can do that personally. And whatever the government does that is just, we have to go along with. But that's not what Jesus came to teach about. The standard of politics is justice, and it applies to everybody, not simply to Christians or followers of Jesus. And so in those terms, we must obey the state, go along with the state insofar as it's just, try to make it more just. But the calling of a Christian is much higher, much more difficult, much more extreme. His extremism showed itself, for instance, in the fact that he was opposed to every political, to every spiritual structure of his time. You know, we're now told that we should, as a nation, pray to God and pray in the schools and do all that kind of thing. That's exactly the opposite of what Jesus said. In the Gospel of Matthew, he says, when you pray, do not do it in public like the pretenders. Go into your hiding place and lock the door and pray to the Father in your hiding place, and the Father will answer you in your hiding place. He never says that the state or anybody else should pray in public. And in fact, he attacked the temple, he attacked sacrifice, he attacked priests. He was opposed to every form of spiritual structure in his time. All the spiritual authorities, high priests, Sadducees, Pharisees, he was extremely critical of, and he had none of them among his followers. There were no priests in his following. He wasn't a priest either.
So Jesus was an anarchist?
No, it's not. Well, that is a political system. Anarchy is a political system. I'm saying this is not a political system. Mm-hmm. This is a personal morality involving union with the Father through Jesus. And it's the calling that he issues, and it's so hard that people tame it right away. They say, oh, well, he doesn't really mean it that when someone punches you in the face, you should turn the other cheek. When someone tries to steal your outer garment, you should give him his inner garment, too. He can't amend that, but he said it over and over. All of his radical sayings are attacks on power and privilege and anything that gets in the way of union with him and the Father.
So really, and my guest is Gary Wills, whose latest book is called What Jesus Meant. It's published by Viking, and you have a lot of fans out there, a lot of people who are reacting to what you've said already because they're calling in without even giving out the phone number, which is 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But before we take some of those calls, it almost sounds like you're saying that Jesus's spirituality or philosophy is completely incompatible with any form of government, because you cannot build a system of justice, as you call government, on the basis of turning the other cheek or ignoring when people commit theft or acts of violence or anything else. So is it completely incompatible with setting up a structure?
No, it's not incompatible. We are bound to justice because we're human beings, and that's true of everybody, including Christians. So that when we address those questions, we have to take the standard of justice that we can address other people in terms of, who are not Christian, and form as just a state as we can. But we as followers of Jesus have different business, harder, higher, very much higher business. That's what he's talking about. And therefore, there's no incompatibility. It's simply, as humans, we have the human responsibility. We're not exempted from that. No one is. That's a God-given order, also the natural order. But the supernatural order to which he calls us is something much different and higher.
Bill in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Gary Wills. Hi, Bill.
Hi. The point I would like to make is that there are a number of theories of ethics. I mean, you mentioned Aristotle, but Aristotle's intention, as far as ethics goes, was to come upon some natural form of ethics, which has almost like an ontological, or it has an existence outside of human beings and is a part of the universe, the way, say, a rock's natural place is close to the earth. So that's why it falls, not because of gravity, but because it's the natural way of things. And the same with his theory of justice. Whereas with Jesus, on the other hand, I mean, you can point directly to someone like Kant or even Rawls' theory of justice. In Kant, it's the categorical imperative, which basically is to love your neighbor as you would love yourself, if you really want to get simple with, and get rid of a lot of the technical philosophical language. And with Rawls, it's Rawls' theory of putting yourself in a society, but you won't know exactly where you're going to be in that society, so that when you design the society, you have no idea where you're going to be, so you're going to design it as the most just society. Is there a question in there?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm trying to make a point. I'm arguing against your point. I mean, you said that there was that Christ was not bringing forth an ethic.
Okay. Gary, go ahead.
Well, all of the theories that you mentioned are the ones that we all debate in terms of natural reason and justice. And that cannot be the basis for living with other people who are not Christians, for instance. Unless you are going to have a theocracy and say Jesus is going to dictate what everybody's religion should be, you have to have the natural realm of people striving with human reason to set up just order, and they will have different arguments for that, although they agree on basic things like the value of human life, the equity of people treating each other fairly. The theories all have some common ground, and that's what we base our politics on. But the religion of Jesus is something quite different from that, and because it's different, we don't impose one religion on everybody. We shouldn't. And that's what he meant by stepping away from all political commitments. For instance, one of the great questions of his day, was the justice of the Roman Empire, which was occupying Judea. People tried to embroil him in that, and he constantly refused. He said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. He didn't define what that was. He paid his taxes. So that kind of debate goes on and must go on, but it's not what he came for.
By the way, I've read where you've criticized the Bush White House as, quote, honeycombed with prayer groups and Bible study cells like a whited monastery, unquote. And yet you were very complimentary of Jimmy Carter in a recent review of his new book. They're both evangelical Christians. Is it just that you like Carter's politics better?
No, I spelled out in that book why I liked him better. He believed in the separation of church and state. There was never a prayer group in his White House. He's the only recent president who never had prayer services in the White House. He was a good Baptist, and Baptists are the original defenders of a separation of church and state. When he argued for positions in public, he did it in terms of public morality. And he says as much that, for instance, he disagreed with some of the laws that he had to uphold because they were democratically passed, abortion, for instance. But in terms of political responsibility, he had to enforce them, although his personal morality was different.
We have to take
a
break.
He was an exemplar of the separation of church and state.
We'll continue in a minute with Gary Wills, his latest book, What Jesus Meant, and more of your phone calls, 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My guest, Gary Wills, his latest book, What Jesus Meant, published by Viking. Maybe you know some of Gary Wills' many other works. Why I Am a Catholic was a bestseller relatively recently. Here's an email that says, he may say that Jesus was not an anarchist because that is a political system. However, doesn't an anarcho-pacifist act exactly the same as Jesus did? For example, Dorothy Day. Also, anarchists would say that they were anti-political and definitely anti-state.
Well, I think Dorothy Day was not an anarchist. She was against the abuses of the state, but she was not against the state in general. And her particular protests, especially about war and nuclear war, were against what she considered unjust actions of the state. And even though some people would act similarly, it's for different motives and with different applications. Jesus goes much farther than any anarchist would ever go. As I say, it's a different realm of human spirituality. He comes not to give us political advice. He'll leave that to his creatures who have to do that as their human responsibility. He came with a specific call from the Father to enter into union with him and therefore into union with the Father.
You take issue with those who, like Thomas Jefferson, seek to de-deify, if that's a word, Jesus, and see him as just a teacher or prophet. Can a non-believer learn about morality and a good life from Jesus?
Not in the sense that was intended. After all, anything that a non-believer can learn from Jesus, he can learn from other people, as Thomas Jefferson said. You can learn that from Epicurus or Epictetus. The motive and the range of Jesus's call is really quite different.
Catherine in Yonkers, you're on WNYC.
Yes.
With Gary Wills. Hi.
Hi. I am looking forward to reading this book. I am delighted, Dr. Wills, that you wrote it, and I agree with the basic premise. But I'm wondering also if you might agree that although Jesus didn't support political systems, he did have a radical political statement in the sense that wherever we have differentials in power, we in a sense, have politics. And that his radical political statement was in saying that the first shall be last and the last shall be first, and those who would be leaders among you should be servants of all. And that, in fact, our political systems could be very well served by that kind of political viewpoint.
Well, take that very saying. The last shall be first is not a political statement. It's impossible in terms of politics. If the last are first, they become first and they become the rulers. The idea that the last shall be first is a mystical idea, and it's the total egalitarianism of members of his mystical body. And he doesn't say humble people will be leaders. He said don't have leaders. He said don't call anyone father. You have only one father. Don't call anyone rabbi. You have only one teacher, the Father. That's a mystical doctrine, not a political one.
And you don't think servant leadership has political ramifications?
It can have, well, he didn't believe in servant leadership. He didn't believe in leadership at all. He said, don't be a leader, whether you're a servant or not.
Mm-hmm.
See, if you try to reduce it to kind of political wisdom, well, that's reachable by political reasoning. It's not at all what he was talking about.
Right.
Catherine, thanks a lot for your call. Susan in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, I'm looking so forward to reading this book. And I do believe that Christ wanted fellowship more than leadership. But there's one thing. Is it Dr. Wills? I'd like for you to clarify about Bible studies, because I know that Jimmy Carter did have Bible studies at the White House. My friend went every Tuesday night with his son to a Bible study and his wife. And also Hillary Clinton and Susan Baker, James Baker, in her biography, she had Bible studies and prayer groups at the White House. So I'd like you to clarify that a little bit, because I do know that that happens, and it's not unique to the Bush.
Okay, let me
well, if Jimmy Carter is not a liar, he did not hold those. Maybe some people met on their own, but he said he gave Bible lessons when he went to church on Sunday, never in the White House. That's what he says. I take his word for it.
All right, Susan, thank you for your call. My guest, Gary Wills, who these days is professor of history emeritus at Northwestern University. You may know many of his other books. He won the Pulitzer for Lincoln at Gettysburg. He wrote Why I Am a Catholic. His latest book is What Jesus Meant. And here's an email that says, if Jesus wanted to enter the United States, he would have to go through immigration, claiming to be the Son of God. Having been involved in free-thinking groups operating both in Israel and Palestine, Jesus would never get a visa.
Well, I don't think he would declare that he was the Son of God on a visa form. He didn't do that when he came and was born into the human community in Palestine. He didn't have to sign documents. It's kind of an absurd question.
Rich in Ridgefield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rich.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Gary, first let me say that I heartily agree with your position as Jesus as a radical. I think, in fact, a lot of what he said or what he meant was probably lost. But my question is this. With regard to the Gnostics and their teachings about inner awareness, self-awareness, the need to learn oneself and hence be closer to the Father, what is your understanding of that and its relationship to his teachings?
Well, the Gnostics were a terribly elitist group who were trying to read out of the church people like Peter. Gnostic Gospels are part of that huge eruption of many, many mystical cults and religions at the time of the coming of Jesus. And all of the Gospels were sorted and sorted for centuries, and the ones that were approved by the church are, it seems to me, the wise ones. Innerness is something you can learn from Plotinus. You can learn it from many people. It's not at all what the specific message of Jesus was, and he was a much more inclusive person than the Gnostics were, much more populist in a sense.
Thank you. So therein lies the difference that, in fact, that you're saying that the Gnostics were too self-absorbed in essence.
Yeah, they're spiritual snobs.
Rich, thank you for your call. But Elaine Pagels, the religion scholar who has written about the Gnostics and the early Christian church in general, maintains that in canonizing certain writings and establishing a religion, the Jesus movement was saved from breaking down into chaos. Do you agree with her?
Sure. In terms of human explanation, there's something to be said for that. Since I am a believer in Jesus, I think that the Spirit guided the church in the choice of how it should express his message.
You say in the book that you can't pick and choose which parts of the New Testament to believe and not. It all has to be taken on faith. But you're not one who I'd associate with interpreting the Bible literally.
No, in fact, I expressly deny that in the very passage that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So reconcile the two. If you can't pick and choose which parts of the New Testament to believe and not, it all has to be taken on faith, then how much room is there for symbolism or metaphor or interpretation?
Well, it has to be taken for what it is. It is a literary expression of a meaning that is so high above us that it's very hard to find human expressions for it. And therefore, it will use language that's symbolic, metaphorical, language taken largely from Jewish scripture. And it's clear that the spiritual teaching is not the same thing as saying the earth, the sun goes around the earth, or any of the other things that fundamentalists believe in.
And another thing to reconcile, you point to Jesus' preference for the unclean, prostitutes, tax collectors, the sick and dying, and say, therefore, Jesus would not reject homosexuality. But doesn't the New Testament denounce it explicitly, reading, for example, from Corinthians 6:9, "Know ye not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived, neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind, nor thieves, nor covetous,
yeah,
nor drunkards,
yep.
Shall inherit the kingdom."
That's in Paul. That's the only place in Paul. It's not in the Gospels. And Paul was still believing in some of the cleanliness code of the Jews. Jesus didn't. The cleanliness code, as expressed in Leviticus, calls unclean anything that's an unnatural mixture, two different kinds of food, two different kinds of fabric, two different kinds of seeds. And they considered homosexuality unclean because it mixed male and female in the passive partner. But we don't follow the cleanliness code on all these other things. We don't say that if someone mixes two fabrics, they are unclean. So there's no reason why we should think that we have to follow the cleanliness code.
So Paul didn't get Jesus' meaning either?
Not sometimes, no.
Sam in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Yes, Dr. Will. It appears to me, after listening to you for so many years, that you're trying to negate anything Jewish. And you say that Jesus did the same. This is not true. Jesus was born a Jew, lived as a Jew, and loved being Jewish. In John 4:22, he says to the lady at the well, "You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is
right.
From
he goes on. He goes on immediately afterward to say, "You worship in one temple; we worship in another temple. But in time, we'll worship in neither temple, because the Spirit does not have a house." So Jesus did not attack all Jews, certainly, but he did attack the spiritual leaders of his time. He attacked the temple. He attacked sacrifice. He attacked priesthood, and he would have done the same for Christian priests and Christian temples. What he was attacking was outward religiosity and religious leaders and structures of religious leadership. The ones that were at hand were Jewish, but he would have the same attitude toward our temples and our priests of Christians.
I'm sure you know Harold Bloom recently wrote a book about Jesus too, called Jesus and Yahweh, The Names Divine. And in what he calls his textual reading of the Gospels, he sees Jesus as an observant Jew whose Jewishness was downplayed by the ex-Jews, for the most part, who wrote the New Testament at a time when they were fighting for their lives in Rome.
I don't know how he gets back from the New Testament to something earlier. What we have is the New Testament, and he was certainly not an observant Jew there. He didn't observe the Sabbath. He didn't observe ritual ablution. He didn't observe a number of things. In fact, he was constantly being reminded that you have offended. You've not observed the Sabbath. You've not observed ritual cleansing. You've mixed with the unclean people, with menstruating women and tax collectors and other unclean people.
And so when you say that you have to look at Jesus or in Paul's denunciation of homosexuality, that's the only reference, and that it goes back to the Jewish position. You have to offer historical analysis of some of what the New Testament says in order to avoid the anti-Semitism of Christianity's past, yes?
That's true. There's nothing anti-Semitic about it, but there is something anti-religious establishment about it. And, you know, the Paul argument, the large context of that is this. He says, the Jews have not followed the law. They have broken it. It was not enough. The prophets have said that. And the pagans have not followed the law. It's not enough. They've broken it. And it's in that context that he talks about their forms of uncleanness. So it's a very complicated argument, and to take that one proof text out and make it a divine condemnation of homosexuality seems to me totally methodologically unsound.
Historian and religion and politics and religion and culture writer Gary Will is my guest for another few minutes on WNYC, his newest book called What Jesus Meant. And here's another email that asks, what would Jesus say about a woman's right to choose her biological destiny? Certainly Catholic doctrine does not allow that, referring to abortion, of course.
Yeah, abortion is an interesting one because it's a totally non-religious subject. It's not treated in the Old Testament, in Jewish scripture. It's not treated in the New Testament at all. It's not treated in the early creeds. It's not treated in the early councils. It's a natural law teaching. Even the Pope says it's a matter of natural law. So natural reasoning is something that should allow all people of goodwill using their intelligence to come to an agreement on abortion, but they haven't done it. And the Pope takes a shortcut. When he had his own advisors, loyal Catholics, lay and clerical, male and female, tell him that natural reason did not reach the conclusion that, for instance, that contraception was wrong, he, again, that's a natural law teaching. He just overrode them and said, well, I as Pope tell you that it's wrong, even though natural reason doesn't seem to. So who is an expert on abortion? It would have to be philosophers, psychologists, biologists.
Not the church.
And the question is, when does human life, not when does human life begin? The semen itself is human life. The separate ovum is human life. It's when does the person begin?
In our last minute, the forward to your book is fascinating on the language of the New Testament and how it was written and how off-base subsequent translations have been. You quote Nietzsche saying that if God wrote the New Testament, he knew surprisingly little Greek. What did that mean?
That it's written in not very elegant Greek because it was a pidgin language. It was the language that everybody had to communicate with each other, even though it was not their first language.
Quickly, have there been consequences of mistranslation?
Yeah, more in the Pauline epistles than in the Gospels, though. It's certainly true that there are misleading translations, as a number of people have said, in the Pauline epistles, but that I don't treat them in this book.
Right, and obviously that is where... We have another minute, so you know what? I'm going to take another phone call. And Terry in Monticello, you're on WNYC, real quick.
Hi, good show. I'm a recovering Catholic myself, an atheist now, but I'm wondering what you think the world would be like if Jesus hadn't come and if there would have been any difference at all. Thanks.
Well, I'm sure there would have, but that's the kind of hypothesis that historians shy away from because there's not much evidence that you can adduce. We don't have a world without Jesus, so we don't know how it would have looked compared to the one that...
Well, she called herself a recovering Catholic, but your last book was Why I Am a Catholic.
Yes.
So...
Oh, yes, I still am a Catholic.
Despite your frequent and voluminous criticism of the Church.
Well, no, not of the Church. The Church is the people of God. You know, it's wrong to say that I differ from the Church. I differ from the rulers of the Church who are part of the Church, but so do most Catholics now.
All right. Gary Wills.
More Catholics agree with me than with the Pope on many of these subjects.
Gary Wills, What Jesus Meant is published by Viking. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Sure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
To the hustlers, killers, murderers, drug dealers, even the scribbles.
Jesus works with them.
To the victims of welfare, feel we living in hell here. Hell yeah.
Jesus works with them.
Now I hear he wanna see thee more clearly. I know he